This is your World War III update. So I got some bad news. Really, really, really bad news. About a month ago, I was talking about how they're going to impose a naval blockade on Iran. In fact, I was talking about that back in January, but the idea occurred to me once again because it appeared as though the U.S. warships were operating at about a distance as you would to be able to successfully interdict Iranian vessels and cargo going in and out of Iran without putting their navy in harm's way. And it occurred to me that that was the most logical explanation for why they were going to deploy Marines to the area, was to board and seize vessels. Well, it appears as though that's what's going to happen. And I'm not trying to come off as pompous when I say pretty much no expert that I talked to said that. So just a reminder, here's what I said on March 8th. They're carrying out a naval blockade of Iran because they can't do shit about Iran's area denial in Hormuz, but they need to be careful because many of those ships are Chinese. This is March 8th. Okay, and now everybody's talking about the possibility of the U.S. interdicting Chinese ships, which of course would be some manner of casus belli. More on that in just a moment, because when I say that the news is bad today, it is worse than most people can possibly imagine. The USS Abraham Lincoln is acting as a gatekeeper in the Arabian Sea, ensuring that unauthorized ships can't pass. You see, I was just a month ahead of the curve here. They intend to choke off Iran's seaborne imports and exports, only a fraction of which can be rerouted through Caspian routes, which, of course, they attacked. About a week after I made this, the Israelis attacked a lot of the warships, the naval presence in the Caspian Sea, Iran's naval presence, in an attempt to interdict the Russian shipments going into Iran. Most of their imported food comes from Russia, which can easily be transported via the Caspian, barring no fuckery from Azerbaijan. Eventually, the U.S. strikes or seizes a Chinese ship and it's game on. So what happened today? Well, of course, the peace talks completely collapsed. I mean, what else did we expect? Even if they were successful, I would be more concerned that the Iranians were just being set up for another perfidious play once again, and that very likely on the way back from Islamabad to Iran, the plane would be blown out of the sky. Now, Professor Mirandi was with the delegation this time, which I found interesting and surprising, considering he's an American citizen. I'm going to try to bring him back on the channel this week to get his perspective on all these things. The Iranians are shocked that the U.S. didn't agree and that they said they were just minutes away from a deal. No, they weren't. I mean, let's get real. They're worlds apart in terms of what the demands are. They want to continue enrichment. The U.S. doesn't want that. They want full control over the Strait of Hormuz. The U.S. doesn't want that. They want to continue to support their proxy networks. The U.S. doesn't want that. So, look, they're worlds apart. Whatever the points that they agreed on were things that they probably agreed on years ago and things that are relatively trivial in the grand scheme of things. So here's what's going to happen, and I want you guys to really just listen to what I'm about to say, okay? Because when you really put everything into perspective, it all makes perfect sense. Now, just last week, the top Chinese diplomat, I believe it might have been their foreign minister, went and visited North Korea, Kim Jong-un, for the first time in many, many years, okay? It's important to remember that North Korea has a mutual defense pact with the Russians. In addition to that, you had the Taiwanese opposition meet with Xi Jinping just last week. Now, a lot of people are saying, oh, China, you know, the Americans can't interdict Chinese warships because then they're not going to be able to get the rare earth metals in order to build their weapons with. Well, that's largely overstated. While it is true that 85 to 90% of the actual refinement and the processing of these rare earth minerals, not the mining, but the processing goes through Chinese conduit. Well, the reality is only 5% of rare earth metals inside or minerals inside the United States are used for military purposes, less than that, in fact. And that they can prioritize and source from Australia and other places. So it's not as if the United States is going to be left without any other alternatives. Is it going to be bad for semiconductor production and the production of smartphones and various things that use magnets and things like that? Yeah, it's going to be shitty for that. But when it comes to war mobilization, there's going to be a national mandate that says that all rare earth metals have to go for the purpose of war. And that's going to be the end of that story, period, point blank. So the Chinese don't have the leverage in this conversation that a lot of people think they do. Now, do they stock the Walmarts and the Costcos with goods? Absolutely, they do. So I would expect to maybe see that disappear off the shelves in the not-so-distant future. Because again, the Chinese leadership was meeting with not only the Taiwanese opposition, but also the North Korean opposition. Why is this important? Well, we've been hearing stories that allegedly the Chinese are going to be shipping man pads to Iran, which I find kind of amusing because these are for shooting down aircraft that are operating at low altitudes, I presume, unless there's something new that they've created, and perhaps it's an extension of what we've seen in the shoot down of the F-35 and the F-15s. But it seems odd because Iran has that technology. I mean, it's like, you know, the Chinese shipping Iran calculators when Iran is creating smartphones. I mean, they're creating practically ICBMs and hypersonic missiles. The idea that they would need man pads from China seems a little odd. But nonetheless, it appears as though there are rumblings that China will now be directly shipping weapons to Iran. Now, how can they do that? They can do it via rail, because there is a rail line that goes into Iran. It has to pass through many countries, of course. They can do it through the Caspian Sea, through Russia. They're likely not now going to be able to do it through the Arabian Sea, because in addition to this blockade, well, that blockade works both ways. That means ships going in. That means the United States is going to attempt to starve out the Iranian people. Now, fortunately for Iran, a lot of their food production is domestic. So I believe 90% is domestic, and whatever they need, of course, they have Russia there who can supply all the grain they could ever possibly need in order to keep their population fed. So we have a situation developing here where it's a perfect storm for a world war. And I stand by my theory that as soon as the United States commits to putting boots on the ground, you're going to see the Chinese make a move on Taiwan. Now, whether or not the Taiwanese opposition is going to be in cahoots with this, or whether she's a spy or what, who knows? We know that there's a U.S. delegation going to Taiwan in advance of the Xi Jinping Donald Trump photo op, which is set for mid-May. Now, they, of course, are going there for the purpose of ensuring and solidifying ties with the Taiwanese, because, of course, the U.S. needs Taiwanese fabs, the chip manufacturing facilities, in order to win the AI arms race. And it appears as though 2026 is very much shaping up to be AGI, because you'll notice now you're not hearing a lot about AGI right now. In fact, Anthropic has now nerfed its own service, and I believe canceled an update, or they canceled service, because apparently the AI tools are so powerful that it could potentially be a national security issue. So they're already throttling access to AGI. Okay, so that means they're getting close. And the Jansen Huang let the cat out of the bag a few weeks ago, and he said that they've already achieved AGI, and then he kind of walked it back a little bit. Nonetheless, they still need Taiwanese semiconductors in order to see that through to its maturity. So this means that if the Chinese make a move on Taiwan, it's very likely that what the U.S. will do is blow up all the fabs. I know this sounds crazy. Congressmen have already been proposing this, of course, to the dismay of many Taiwanese lawmakers. And they're concerned that the Americans will try to blow up the fabs so that they can't fall into the hands of the Chinese. Not that the Chinese can't make very small nanoscale like chips, but not to the extent that Taiwan can. And the United States is well behind. Elon is working on something right now, but that's probably not going to be fully operational for some time. So you see how all the parts move together here. Now, the other big story, the other massive failure for J.D. Vance, who's just a patsy in all this anyways, well, Orban, it looks like he might lose the election, or if he hasn't lost it already. And so what that means is that presuming that the next leader is actually going to be more pro-Ukraine, then you're going to see a greater commitment of funds to the Ukraine war, which gives Russia less options. Okay, so that means that the war with Russia and Ukraine is going to ramp up. And despite the Easter truce, which apparently was violated 6,000 times, 3,000 times by each side. Okay, so they had a truce which was violated 6,000 times. The only thing that didn't happen is that they didn't do large-scale attacks using missiles and drones on each other's countries. So it all starts to tie together because, of course, you have the Russians alleged to be providing Iran with intelligence. And it's just you couldn't see a more perfect storm in the making for a world war than what we're seeing right now. Because, of course, you have Zelensky's guys operating in the Middle East, okay? And they are helping to shoot down the drones. Now, in addition to that, you have Pakistan, who just sent, I believe, 13,000 troops into Saudi Arabia. While these talks were ongoing, Pakistan greeted the leadership of the Iranian delegation, they greeted them well in military fatigues, and they did not greet the U.S. In that respect, which says a lot, which says that the Pakistanis are firmly aligned with the Saudis, who they have a nuclear pact with, as well as the Americans. Now, it's possible that they've already shipped nuclear weapons into Saudi Arabia. I don't know if that's the case or not. I doubt that Pakistan would launch a nuclear strike on Iran from the Pakistan mainland. They'd very likely want to put those assets and deploy them from Saudi soil because they know the war is about to ramp up. And one of the tactics that are employed by the Iranians is to attack the Gulf states. And of course, the biggest Gulf state of all is Saudi Arabia. And if you want to put the world on notice, you blow up the Yanbu pipeline, which basically is what's shipping. It's the only thing that's keeping the world together at this point, and it's not really keeping it together, is a pipeline. I'm not sure how big it is. It's probably, a few feet wide. And that pipeline right there is the main thing that is keeping the world's oil needs satiated for the time being. And if you just blow up a few pumping stations, that thing is out of commission. If the Houthis start to do something in the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, which apparently, according to UKMTO, there was a attempt to board a vessel in that region. It could have been Somalian pirates, could have been the Houthis, who knows, but it wasn't an attack on a ship. It was an attempt to seize a vessel in and around the Bab el-Mandeb Strait. And so as the U.S. gets ready to pull the trigger once again, we can expect that hostilities are going to continue to flare up in the direction of the Gulf states. They're going to continue to attack the UAE, who has already taken a more autonomous approach in terms of their attacks on Iran. We've seen that in the initial phases of the ceasefire, where they flew their own warplanes to Iran to do some bombing raids. And so we're going to see those places lit up. We're likely entering the phase where attacks on desalination plants is becoming a viable target set for the Iranians, who will now be faced with a threat from Pakistan as well. Okay, so this situation is getting wildly out of control. Of course, Pakistan has dual allegiances with China, so they have to play their cards right in that respect. And India, I guess they share a certain unity with the Pakistanis in the sense that both of them are at least tacitly aligned with Israel, in the sense that they both support Saudi Arabia, who is supported by the United States, who is against Iran. Okay, so it's a very complex web we weave when it comes to Pakistan and India because of the situation in Kashmir and what could flare up there potentially. Remember, we just averted a nuclear war with Pakistan and India not too long ago. So with a lot of these, it's not always bipolar. Sometimes it's tripolar. And in the case of India, Pakistan, and a lot of the allegiances throughout the Middle East, there are these tripolar intersecting alliances, which really complicate things a lot in terms of countries want to fully commit to providing support to countries. So the other thing that's happening right now, Trump is boasting about how oil tankers are lining up to come to the Gulf of Mexico. Well, what do you think they're putting in those oil tankers? What do you think they're doing there? They're selling the oil from the Strategic Oil Reserve. Okay? They're draining the Strategic Oil Reserve to meet global demand, which is the same thing that Biden did, and which is what I knew they would do because we live in a global oil market. And they're prioritizing the petrodollar over more protectionist policies, which would entail tariffing said countries so you can't export it in an attempt to suppress gas prices. But it appears as though Trump has just completely thrown caution to the wind. They don't seem too concerned about the midterms. I think they think, well, if this thing can cool down at least 2 months or 3 months before the elections, then maybe, you know, we can turn the ship around. Because in political timelines, I mean, what is it, 6 months, 7 months until those elections? That's a long time. People are incredibly fickle nowadays, okay? So anything can happen. And I think they have a little bit more time. They don't have a lot more time before Trump meets Xi Jinping, and I'm sure he wants some measure of predictability in the global marketplace and lower volatility going into that. And of course, the ability to claim victory and use that as potential leverage. But it may just be that interaction is more confrontational. I think it's going to go how everybody thinks it's going to go. You know, Trump is going to talk tough and it's going to be kind of embarrassing because he doesn't have all the cards in that relationship, of course. Trump, when asked today whether or not gas prices would be higher or lower, he said, well, they might be higher or they might be lower. Who knows? So there you go. There's your answer. And yeah, so they're draining the Strategic Oil Reserve. And this is something that people really got to think about. Because when this is all over, countries are going to want to double, if not triple, their Strategic Oil Reserves. After what has just happened here, countries are going to be stockpiling oil like nobody's business. And so these prices right now are still rock bottom prices as compared to where they should be. Because the demand that's built up is going to be amplified by the fear that something like this could happen again. And remember, we're really only in the second inning because now they're about to impose a naval blockade. And what that potentially amounts to is boarding Chinese ships with U.S. Marines. And so what I think Trump has to do here is he can't just seize or turn back Iranian cargo and oil tankers outright. They could potentially just embargo the cargo vessels so not to disturb the oil price, okay? And so what Trump is saying is that they're going to commandeer or seize vessels or turn them around. I'm not sure what they're going to do, but only vessels that have paid Iran the toll. So if they don't pay Iran a toll, which the Chinese, I presume, considering they're buying Iranian oil, that they would be exempted from that toll, then does that pertain to them? Is this how they're going to work around and avoid a clash with the Chinese over this issue? I mean, it's only a matter of time. And then we also have to consider that with Israel, who has an itchy trigger finger, this is the perfect situation. In fact, I thought over the weekend when CENTCOM said that they were moving warships through the Strait of Hormuz and doing minesweeping operations, which didn't make any sense because they weren't using actual minesweepers. But anyways, I thought that that was a setup for a Gulf of Tonkin / USS Liberty type incident, real or imagined attack on a vessel that could be blamed on the Iranians. So there's always going to be that lingering. And with the potential attack on some of these cargo ships, remember that the Iranians have these missiles that they can launch from cargo containers, which look just like a cargo container. You can't see it. You can't detect it. I don't know. Maybe they got some X-ray technologies, satellite tech that they could see, you know, what's in all these containers. But that could be something that is used against a U.S. warship who was not expecting it when they were trying to board a vessel. So there's all kinds of ways in which this can go wrong. But I presume what Trump is going to do, if he's smart in this, what they will do is they'll say, well, we're going to double the toll. So if a ship is exiting the Strait of Hormuz and paying the Iranians a toll, then Trump would charge an additional toll. This would suppress demand and supply shock, okay, because the oil or the cargo would still be making its way to market. It would just be slightly inflationary because not only would they be told by the Iranians, but they would also be told by the Americans. And so that is really the only way to make this work. And that doesn't really penalize the Iranians, though. That's the problem, right? In order for this to actually hurt, they have to actually seize the vessels and impact Iran's ability to, in the very least, get cargo, so import goods and services. And perhaps that could potentially be what's the main reason for this, is not so much Hormuz exports, rather imports, to starve out the population. Because I think that's, at least as far as I can tell. So you see how this situation is just, when I said it's bad, it's really bad. What has happened over the weekend is you now have Ukraine war, which is going to go into overdrive. Because Orban, you know, I mean, I usually never take things at face value when it comes to politics. But if what they say is true, that he was in fact holding out and preventing NATO from committing a lot of resources and the EU from committing resources in support of Ukraine, because of course Hungary's dependence on Russian oil and gas. Well, if he's actually out of the picture and this next person is going to be a pushover, then I mean that situation is it's over. It's going to get really, really bad. If you think it's bad now, it's going to get so supercharged that we ain't seen nothing yet. And you could even start to see Ukrainian drones flying in the direction of Ukraine. Now they're going to be heavily preoccupied just defending their own backyard. But the Iranians have already threatened Ukraine because of Ukrainian operators who are acting on at the behest of the Gulf state countries to help them with shooting down drones in a more economically viable way. The Ukrainians claim that they only use something like, I can't remember how many Patriot interceptors, but it's not nearly as much as you would think throughout the entire duration of the war, because they've found different ways of shooting down drones, mostly Shahed drones, in ways that are more cost effective. So they're trying to share that knowledge with the Gulf states. And that, of course, complicates Iran's plans in order to have as leverage attacks against those countries' oil and gas infrastructure, which drives the price of oil and gas up. But I mean, for Trump to make this announcement on a Sunday is very interesting. And it may well be that he comes out Monday morning and they drop another bomb, like, oh yeah, talks are still on. And, you know, I can't see people buying it anymore. You know, this one, this Islamabad, that was, I think, the last time we're going to hear from the Iranian delegation with respect to this. I think it's game over, despite what the snake oil Pakistani prime minister is trying to say about this, that talks are still ongoing. No, they're not. Everybody went home. It's over. So this looks really, really bad. Really, really bad. Donald Trump made another lengthy post that I'm not going to go into. But if Iran doesn't get the bomb at this point, they're dumb. I mean, just straight up. I don't know where this 104 IQ is. Because if you had gotten the bomb years ago in secret, you know, you wouldn't be having any of these problems right now. I've always questioned the idea that, well, if we attack Iran, then they're going to be able to get the bomb. How? When you're under constant bombardment and special forces are trying to raid you at every moment of weakness, you know, I just can't see that happening. So it's a big country and a lot can happen underground. And if they have the scientists, like they claim, they can make a bomb in 24 hours. They can do a demonstrative strike. They can catch it on 4K video. They can broadcast it to the world and they can say, hey, if you guys keep fucking around, well, this is going to happen somewhere in a country that is very close to ours. So stop messing around. And that's all that would have to happen. That would be it. Now, of course, this might cause the United States and Israel to up the ante and attack Iran with nuclear weapons. So the demonstration would have to be potent enough that it would dissuade the West from trying to advance further after that. And you would have to, in the very least, have probably 12 to 20 nuclear missiles in order to establish a viable deterrent, because that's really all you need against a country that's the size of Israel or the Gulf states. I mean, you put one of those nukes on Saudi Aramco and it's lights out for the planet. It's lights out for the Middle East. And we're talking about a billion people dying of famine. Okay. So anything could happen at this point. I kind of thought over the weekend briefly, I think I made a tweet that it had looked like the Iranians were actually throwing in the towel. Because when you've seen the Iranian delegation being escorted by the Pakistani, I'm not sure if it was the foreign minister or it was some high-ranking, you know, diplomat who was in military fatigues escorting the Iranian delegation, it looked like they were about to sign the terms of surrender, and they didn't. And some people thought it was going to be Delcy Rodriguez. And I thought that there's a possibility of that these guys had finally just said we had enough. Turns out they didn't. And this is the dumb thing about this, is that they're willing to die for their cause, but all of this could have been avoided. And I'm not the only one. This is not an extremist point of view anymore, that having a nuclear deterrent in Iran is a way to maintain strategic balance in the region and prevent conventional wars like this, which are far more economically damaging than whatever could happen. Because if Iran has a nuclear deterrent and so does Israel, Israel will be less inclined to do things that it ought not do, like invade its neighbor countries. And Iran, the same thing, because they know it means mutually assured destruction. So that's what we're looking at. This week, we're looking down the barrel of a loaded gun. And at the time of making this video, oil's up, but Trump could come out and say something in the morning and, you know, it turns all around. But I mean, at the end of the day, because countries are going to want to stock up fast, the demand for oil after this crisis is going to be far above the baseline for when it was before the crisis. Okay. So just keep that in mind, that if the US had 400 billion barrels in the strategic oil reserve, they're going to want well over a billion in the future. That goes for every single country, especially the ones that didn't have a strategic oil reserve. And they'll be willing to pay for it, especially if they believe that there's going to be another near-term disaster, because it takes a long time to stockpile oil. I mean, to fill up a strategic oil reserve takes a long time. It's a process. And even draining it is a process. Only, I can't remember how much is drained. I haven't looked at the numbers in the last few days, but it wasn't much that was drained. And they're committing to drain, I think, nearly 40% of what they had. That's in the United States alone. So that itself is going to put a huge demand on it, you know? So you're probably talking, whatever the strategic global strategic oil reserves were before this conflict, my guess would be that is going to be tripled, if not quadrupled, if not the sky is the limit. People are going to want to stockpile as much oil as they can, especially these countries who have realized how existential it actually is. And they're going to be willing to pay high prices, because paying high prices is way better than not having access to it at all. Let's see what the experts say about that one, shall we? And no, the US is not going to leave NATO. They never were. The U.S. is not going to war with Turkey. That's not going to happen. Okay. I'll make some $2 bets, most likely, with some of the guests that I'm going to be talking to this week. Because, yeah, there's still a lot of people who, I think they're just too close to the problem. A lot of these analysts and academics, they drop these conclusions on the basis of models that they're highly committed to and they identify with. And me, because I have no political affiliations. I'm just a guy trying to figure it out. I'm not beholden to anybody's set of ideas. And I have a pretty good awareness of my own biases when it comes to this stuff, which allows me to make the prediction I did well over a month ago when I said that the plan is to blockade Iran. Now, the question is at this point, to what extent will that blockade be coupled with a direct attack on Iran once again? Because the Israelis, of course, said that they're not going to be relenting in their attacks. And the question now is, will attacks commence immediately, or will the initial ceasefire actually be honored? And that would, of course, give us about another week or so to prepare for the worst of the worst. And it could come out that Trump might say, well, we're going to extend the ceasefire, but we're just going to continue to impose the blockade. And then we're going to be doing this blockade thing, which in and of itself is incredibly inflationary, as I've just articulated. So guys, just keep on prepping. I'm keeping my promise. We got prepping videos coming out next week. We're going to likely be migrating back to the Prepper News channel for daily updates, assuming things don't get off the rails. When I'm doing World War III updates on this Canadian Prepper channel, that's because we're in wartime. Okay, so that's kind of my unwritten rule at this point, is that if the situation is serious, I'm addressing my entire audience. If things ever start to cool down again, that's when we go back to just doing the daily updates on the Prepper News and using this channel exclusively for people who really want actionable information. Over the weekend, we interviewed Catherine Austin Fitz, who has some pretty interesting ideas and a great grasp of the financial system. Some of her views are a little bit out there, and I've said as much in the past, but you know, having spoken with her one-on-one, the Tucker Carlson interview that she did, I think it was highly sensationalized, and she does a lot to demystify a lot of those views in our discussion. There definitely is something interesting to be said about this vast bunker network conspiracy that she's talking about. And to me, that's just self-evident. Of course, the government would have continuity of government plans, and they would likely be more advanced than your imagination can entertain. And I also did a property review yesterday, which was probably one of the cheapest, best properties I ever seen for SHTF. You know, in terms of when I say cheap, people think, oh, well, must be 70. No, 270,000 Canadian, which is about 200,000 American. This thing had a lake. Okay. It was remote. It was in a shitty climate zone, a shitty, what they call a plant hardiness zone, which is 2A, which is not good, which is basically as low as you can possibly get to growing the worst kind of fruit trees you can imagine, but you can still do it. You can still build a greenhouse like this. But it had everything. It had a deep lake. It had a nice mixed forest. It was remote. It was butted up against a national park. You guys got to go check out that video, because if you're looking for a budget SHTF property, get that property, because I don't think it's going to last long now that I talked about it. And I was tempted in getting it, even though I can't see myself wanting to move 1 inch eastward from here. If I'm moving, it's westward. And it was towards Manitoba and Riding Mountain National Park. But it was a nice, I mean, not a nice house. I mean, it's, you know, it's a $270,000 house. It's a whole quarter section. And again, to have a deep lake that only you have access to, I mean, I still actually want to buy the property, because just as like a backup, and it was remote enough that, you know, you would ride out SHTF without too many people bugging you. That's for sure. So go check out that video this week. We have videos on fuel management, how to make fuel last forever. Yes, you heard correct. How to make gasoline or diesel last forever. And we also are going to have a conversation about a new type of communications device or devices or system. And it's going to allow you to communicate off-grid without having to use radio, okay? So it's pretty interesting stuff. It's been around for a while, but there's countries that are now trying to streamline it and make it a little bit more accessible. All right, so take care.